New State Senator Justin Eichhorn. He's a Republican from District 5. It's his first legislative session. Thanks for coming in today. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So, talk to Representative Lehman about what it's like to be in her first session. What's it like for you?
Well, the same thing I told you earlier, the best analogy I've heard about, you know, your first term in the legislature is it's like drinking from a fire hose. And that's true in a lot of ways. The pace there is crazy, and it's different than a person would expect, but not in a bad way. It's just different. I've really had a great opportunity to be able to learn over the last month that we've been there and, you know, learn and grow and build relationships with people on both sides of the aisle. So I've had a lot of fun doing that.
So I'm talking to you on a Friday. You're here in the Grand Rapids studios with us. Do you have Fridays to be in your district, or what's that like?
Very, very fortunate about the schedule. Our Majority Leader Paul Gazelka decided that he wanted to have a constituent and family-friendly schedule. So we start Monday mornings at 11 a.m., so I leave early Monday morning. And then Thursdays we're done by 6 p.m., so I can get home late Thursday night. I have all day Friday, Saturday, and Sunday in the district to meet constituents and enjoy some time with my family as well. I have four young children.
That's what I was going to say. Tell us about your family.
Yeah. Four young children, ages 2, 4, 6, and 8. And my wife, Brittany, we've been married almost 10 years. And I've lived in Grand Rapids my entire life. I've been involved in retail here and multifamily housing.
So the two-year-old probably doesn't understand it, but does the eight-year-old get that his or her dad is a state senator now?
It's boy, boy, girl, boy. So okay. My oldest two are boys, and they get it quite a bit. My oldest boy, the eight-year-old, he's already saying, well, I'm going to be a senator someday. So, you know, anybody can grow up to be anything they want, and, you know, certainly if that's what he wants to do, I'd be excited to help him. It was actually really a lot of fun after the election when we got into my office. Right after election, we'd went to Disney World. We had that plan before I even signed up to run. And as he's looking out my office, he sees the light rail goes by and he says, wow, Daddy, that's just like Disney World. We got to have more of those. So it's kind of fun to see the things they attach to, you know, I mean, because they don't have a political thinking, you know, when they're that age.
Right.
So it's just kind of fun to hear that. And then when we had the first day of session, my six-year-old actually got to go up to the front and ring the gavel. Our president of the Senate allowed him to do that. And I've got just a wonderful picture of him just beaming from ear to ear as I'm up there with him. And he's, you know, hammering the gavel. So that was really fun.
Let's talk a little bit about what it's like or some of the things you've been hearing from your constituents, whether it's when you were campaigning or since you've begun the session. What are some of the biggest concerns, would you say, to your district? And I guess I should say that you cover Beltrami, Cass, Hubbard, and Itasca counties, really large district.
Most of Itasca, most of Cass, a little bit of Beltrami, and about a couple hundred people in Hubbard.
Okay.
The number one issue I heard during the campaign, I would say up until about the last month and a half, was around the economy. People are concerned about our mining industry, our timber industry. You know, we see the attacks on those. We see the mining, you know, the downturn in those, the bankruptcies of the Magnetation and some of those companies. So people were scared about that. But really in the last month and a half, it transitioned to healthcare because people are scared about that too, and rightfully so. I mean, there's people paying, you know, $15,000, $20,000 a year for insurance with $13,000 premiums. And, you know, it would eat up half of a person's income. So rightfully so, that was a big issue. And we've done a lot of work in that realm. The other main issue I heard, but this was after I had won, Sandy and I had went around and Matt Bliss and I had went around. We talked to all of the cities, all of the counties, all the police departments, sheriff departments, school districts. Number one issue we heard that I didn't hear even once during the election, during the campaign, was mental health. Please do something to help our mental health. And I've been, you know, trying to learn more about that and see ways I might be able to help with that and help, you know, foster a better environment so we can get some more mental health services, especially in greater Minnesota. For me, I serve on five committees, actually. I serve on E-12, policy and finance. I'm the vice chair of the policy, and the E is early childhood education and through grade 12. Which they thought was important for me with my young children. Mm-hmm. I serve on both of the environment committees. One of the environment committees deals with legacy finance. So that's great as well, especially for our area with our timber and mining industries. I also serve on capital investment, which is bonding. But back to my point about mental health, you know, we see a lack of mental health professionals in the schools, and schools can't necessarily afford to do that. And, you know, I guess there's probably some concerns from parents as well about privacy and stuff like that. So how do we work to get all the parties involved? And there's some bipartisan support to try to get, you know, more mental health services in the school system, you know, because it starts there, but also beyond that as well.
Senator Eichhorn, you said bipartisan support. And it must be a little bit different transition as you campaign and you work with your party and then you're in office and now you serve everybody in your district. And certainly that's who you were talking to as you campaigned. But, you know, we hear this phrase, work across the aisle. How does that played out so far? What is that process like for you?
I can tell you from members that have been there a while, they say this year is different than it's ever been. And there's a couple things we can contribute to that. The new Senate building, even though there were a lot of people that rallied against it, I didn't agree with the $90 million price tag, but that building's there. It's not going away. And unfortunately, the first year that building was open, Republicans didn't occupy it in protest because of the $90 million. But our new majority leader, he Paul Gozelka, he's talked a lot about building bridges, you know, building relationships, building, you know, bridges in our own party, and then, of course, with other senators as well in the DFL, and everybody being in the same building is extremely important for that. There have been several areas. I've already worked with Senator Tomasoni, who's a DFL from over on the Virginia side, the other Senate district. I've worked with Paul Utke, who's on the other side, and Senator Kerry Rood, who's to the south. Being able to walk down the hallway and talk with those people about things that might affect all of our areas certainly helps in collaboration and working across the aisle. The other piece is, we only have a one-seat majority. If we don't get buy-in from both sides of the aisle, nothing's going to get done. If we try to do something crazy, there's somebody in our own caucus that's going to jump ship, and we're going to have people from the other side that aren't going to support it. So we need to do things that are more middle of the road, work together type of things. And I've really seen that from both sides. There really is a desire to work together. And, you know, in the Senate, we really see that much more than in the other chamber, which is a positive thing. And I think that's good for Minnesota and good for the Senate.
We're talking to State Senator Justin Eichhorn today on Northern Community Radio. Let's talk about one of the bills you presented this week. I read a little bit about Senate File 503. Tell us what that's about.
That would be, it relates to the Indian Child Welfare Act, and that's actually a federal mandate that comes down to the counties when there's like an out-of-home placement for a Native American child. The county basically takes the lead on that. But the county actually has to pick up most of the tab. The federal government doesn't provide the funding for counties to properly do that. And we're one of only just a handful of states that isn't involved in the equation. So I had all four of the counties I represent come to me and say, you know, please do something to help us. So what this will do is provide, you know, some money to the counties to help with that, so the counties aren't picking up the entire tab. It'll be, you know, a benefit of about $1 million a year to Itasca County, about the same to Cass, and about $3.5 million a year to Beltrami. The way their county administrator described that is their fiscal cliff. And the way I see, you know, the, you know, state government and county government is we really need to be partners with them, because a lot of the things that we legislate and do, the county is the delivery of the services that we legislate a lot of times. So we need to be partners with them. And this is an area that I thought was really important, that we need to partner with the counties, because we're not doing it now. And it's something the counties were really asking for. And it's something that the tribes have buy-in as well. They believe that if the state can help the counties do that, it allows their children to be taken care of on a better level.
And are you optimistic about the bill? What's it
I am.
Like?
It started out in the Health and Human Services Reform, and it passed out of that committee onto the Taxes Committee. You know, our tax chair understands that, you know, there's a need for this, and it's not just my four counties. There's several counties throughout the state that are really having this issue. I think the odds that we get it in the final tax package are pretty good. Very optimistic about it, and I've talked with him about it a few times, and he understands the need and my desire to have the state be a partner with the counties in this.
Okay. Well, so we've been talking about that you're new to the legislature. Biggest surprise so far? What?
The biggest surprise has been the pace. The pace that we're going at right now is normally what you see at the end of session. With four kids, I thought, oh, this is going to be easy. You know, I'm used to not getting any sleep. But you get less sleep in the legislature than you do having four young children, which was kind of a surprise, but I don't mind it. I'm prepared for it. I mean, I'm there very early in the morning until late at night. And that's fine. I'm happy to be able to do that. I was able to step away from you know, the work I was doing. I've got family members helping me with the multifamily housing, so I can concentrate 100% of my effort on Senate duties. So I'm very fortunate in that aspect, but the pace is what really, really surprised me. And the culture, I think, is different. You know, when the media really portrays this headbutting kind of thing that you see, and, you know, the headbutting, and maybe it's because of the, you know, the slim majority we have on the Republican side in the election, but there's less butting heads that I see, at least on our Senate side, than what you hear about in the media.
What else is on your radar for the rest of session? Some big things you're thinking about for the district?
Well, what we've done the last month has largely been agency overviews. A third of the entire body is new. But there are a few areas I want to work on. One that I didn't necessarily know I wanted to work on until I got there. The Office of the Legislative Auditor last year did a report on teacher licensure. And we have a bit of a problem, you know, allowing teachers, especially from out of state, to get into teaching. We have a problem with school districts having the flexibility to get somebody who may be a skilled trades type person, you know, teaching maybe one or two classes, just because of the large barriers of the large amount of time of education being able to teach. So what the legislative auditor recommended is going to a tiered type system. And what that would do is it would certainly add value to the people who, you know, did the bachelor's or the master's or PhD to go to be a teacher, but it also allows school districts the flexibility to maybe get somebody from out of state in the classroom while they, you know, get the extra requirements that the state of Minnesota requires, or to get somebody back into the school that may want to teach a trades type program. You know, we hear that a lot from industry around here, that they're frustrated because there's, you know, they don't have the workforce as much anymore. Kids are coming out of high school going on to a four-year college, which isn't all bad, but the four-year degree isn't necessarily right for everybody. And we need those people that want to go into those skilled trades type positions to work in our forests and our mine and plumbers and heaters and electricians and iron workers, and it goes on and on. And if we can start some of those programs back at the high school level, I think that would be really important. And I'd like to be supportive of that. We're also talking a lot about career and tech ed to help the schools out. The other piece I would like to work on is the funding formula. This sounds like a next year project because the school funding formula is so convoluted that they jokingly say only a couple people in the entire state understand it. We would like to see, you know, some of the disparities there kind of closed. You know, greater Minnesota districts in general receive a lot less money than metro districts, and that's really unfortunate. You know, in my opinion, a kid in Grand Rapids or Bemidji should be as worth as much as a kid in the cities. I mean, we have a lot of issues here as well, and, you know, our school districts and our school boards are well-equipped to be able to handle those programs, but I don't think, you know, back to the partnership that I was talking with the counties, I don't think that they get that partnership coming from the state that they fully need. So that's an area I'd like to work on as well. On my environment committees, you know, my main initial goal, I mean, we don't have any plans going forward, but I think we need somebody to really be an advocate for our timber industries here. So important to our area. Somebody that's going to be an advocate for our mining industries. You know, again, those are a couple industries that have come under attack, but they're really our way of life here. And, you know, we've been doing these things for over 100 years in this district, and we know how to do it responsibly. We want to do it responsibly. And I don't think there's a large understanding, at least from some of the agencies like the MPCA and the DNR and some of those different agencies. I don't think they understand how much we truly care about our environment, but we also care about our jobs as well. So being an advocate to help them understand that we really do good things here and we need to support those industries is very important for me.
Do you see, as one of the big things you do when you're there at work in the legislature, that you give voice to people who do not live in large cities?
I think to some degree, you know, there are so many issues that come through the legislature. There's some issues that don't necessarily relate to our area, but it's still important to have a voice. For example, the bill that just came through the Senate floor yesterday, it passed out of the House and now passed out of the Senate yesterday, was for a power plant in Becker. And I was supportive of that for a couple reasons. They went through their process, and they wanted to do a mixture of wind, solar, and gas generation. They have a coal plant now that's going to be coming offline. They're switching away from coal, but they still wanted to produce energy. They went through the process. You know, they got all the stakeholders involved. They got to the very end of it, and the PCA said, well, we'll let you do the wind and the solar piece, but we don't think we want you to do the gas piece anymore. So you're just going to have to wait a while, and maybe we'll decide later if you can have that or not. So there was a piece of legislation that came through that, you know, allowed them to move forward because that process had already been done. The MPCA just didn't complete the process. And the reason I was supportive of that is our industries here really need that baseload power. I understand that wind and solar is important, and we certainly need to continue those efforts, but we also need those reliable sources of 24-hour energy, such as natural gas. And natural gas is a step in the right direction. It's cleaner than coal. So at some point, you know, maybe it's our district that ends up in that fight. Our industries here need that baseload generation. So it, we have a very diverse economy, a very diverse population. We need to have diverse energy sources to fully serve all of the needs of all of the players in our communities. So even though that wasn't directly in our district, at some point, this issue could affect our district. So I was supportive of that.
That is Senator Justin Eichhorn. Should people contact you if they have issues with bills or concerns of what's going on in the district?
We hope people reach out to us. We see a lot of lobbyists in the hallway, so I actually always welcome when somebody from the district comes by. You know, there's, you know, like Bemidji Day at the Capitol's coming up. That was a lot of fun. I had some students from Itasca Community College, or I had some students from Bemidji State there. It's always fun to see people there. I know the realization is people can't always come to St. Paul. So I do appreciate hearing from people that are actually in the district, because we hear a lot from people that are out of the district and lobbyists. So I appreciate hearing from constituents and knowing their concerns, so I can, you know, take that into account when we go to vote on things and when there's discussions on things, so that way I can carry the message for the whole community. Because like you said earlier, now that I won, I represent everybody, not just one side or the other. And that's why we're really trying to build bridges and work together. But yes, if somebody wants to reach out to me, my information's available on the Minnesota Senate site, as it is with any senator or representative. And we do hope that people reach out to us.
Well, thanks so much for talking with us. We'll check in with you later in the session and see how things are going.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity today.